We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Fay. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. Jack, how we doing?
Pretty good, Nick. It's five draft picks. Who would have thunk it? You had a couple of unrestricted free agents or whatever they were, some other young kids to add to the G League roster. I mean, we might not have got the Larry O.B., but whatever the Summer League trophy is, the Nets are coming for it.
Yeah, a couple undrafted free agents, and like you said, five picks in the draft. I mean, people asked me yesterday, do you think the Nets are going to take like three picks? I probably would have said no. The fact that they drafted two in the first and three in the second, big surprise. Obviously, we had the trade of Landry Shamet for Javon Carter. We'll talk about that and plenty more, but as always, you can find the Brooklyn Buzz on all streaming platforms. Jack, where do you want to start?
Let's start with the start of the night, Nick, which was that Landry Shamet trade, which saw him traded to the Phoenix Suns for Javon Carter and pick 29. So the Nets got another first rounder in that. And what were your immediate thoughts on it? I guess if we look back to last year, this is essentially pick 19 from last year for Javon Carter and this year's first round pick 29, which turned into Damon Sharpe.
Yeah, I mean, I think my initial thoughts before I knew who they drafted would pick 29, I thought maybe it could lead to a bigger trade, you know, two first-round picks. Maybe you trade up. Maybe you trade for another player. Maybe you dump DeAndre Jordan. But we heard a lot of rumors with Landry Shamet over the last couple weeks of him being involved in trade offers and different packages. And I don't think the Nets were super high on him after last season. You know, he's very inconsistent. His playoff performance was lackluster to an extent. Like, they needed somebody to step up against the Bucks, and he couldn't really be that guy. He was getting played off the floor. And then, like you kind of mentioned before we hopped on, like, cost control, new contract coming up. He is a shooter, has a decent percentage. You're going to have to give him some money. So it's like, it kind of made sense in my head. Like, Shamet wasn't a perfect fit. Didn't feel like his vibe with the Nets was amazing. And Javon Carter, on the other hand, was a guy that you're like, okay, this is some gritty, tough defense type guy. You know, shot a good percentage from three. Fills a depth need, you know, because he does play point guard. He's not necessarily a true point guard or anything like that. But gives you one of those, like, complementary role players, you know, kind of similar vibes to a Bruce Brown and what he can bring in terms of just, like, that intangible stuff. You know what I mean? Just like that extra energy and hustle that you kind of like really love to see from your role players when you have superstars. And obviously pick 29, like I said, it kind of offered some different flexibility. Nets ended up using it for a player that I think feels a need as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, Landry Shamet, just from a personal perspective, I thought that he endeared himself to Nets fans. You know, he had a good mentality. You know, he spoke glowingly of just everything about it. We're never going to forget the moment where he was traded and he was listening to a bit of Jay-Z, Empire State of Mind, having a nice little Rosso Vino to celebrate the occasion. And unfortunately, you know, he just wasn't able to produce at the level that he could. You know, obviously, he may not have been given the opportunity. Some of it was his size. You know, Joe Harris obviously was the guy that was probably getting that number one sort of role. You know, he had fluctuating season. There was at the start of the season where it's just like, come on, Landry, this is what you do best, my guy. And then he got back, and I think a lot of us were really enthused for him because he had the right mentality. He knew he was going to get back. And then obviously the playoffs, he just got outplayed by a team that's too athletic and plays a lot of players off the floor. And the Nets need playoff rotation guys, and I think that that was illuminated by Sean Marks, obviously having to give him a rookie extension. You know, he has ties to Monty Williams. Monty Williams has said in the past that, you know, Landry Shamet's the kind of guy that I'll let my daughters marry. So there's some strong ties there, and I think that Sean Marks did a really good job to get value in return, because Javon Carter is basically, we're seeing, you know, appreciation posts, all this love from Suns media and fans to Javon Carter in a very similar vein to what we saw Bruce Brown last year.
Yep.
And Bruce Brown, we saw what he turned into a small ball five. Now, I think Javon Carter might be a better guard defender, point guard defender than Bruce Brown. So I think when we put them both out there, the defensive lineups are going to be, you know, Gary Payton, Scottie Pippen. It's going to be goddamn outstanding having both of those guys on the floor. And you mentioned his shot. You know, I think that the, also his point guard-ish sort of skills work well, you know, because he's either, if when healthy, if he plays next to Harden or next to Kai, you know, secondary ball handling, you know, a good athlete, really strong, really quick, you know, hustle plays that I think get the team going that you want out of a role player. I'm super excited to see JC on this team, and I'm going to be calling him JC already. It started now, and it's going to start for the next however many years we have him. But we do have him under cost control for two more seasons. $3.65 million this season and $3.9 million in 22-23. You know, Sean Marks continues to find these little pieces here and there to complement the superstar role players, which is no easy feat when you have such an inflated salary for your big three. And we'll get to their extensions a little bit. KD, I spoke a little bit in some presses in Tokyo. But I think that being able to find guys that and contribute to some level while also having them under a level of control that isn't going to break the bank is a real, it might be as good as getting those superstars in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like if you made a cake and didn't have the icing. You know what I mean? It's like that's what Sean Marks is doing. He's getting those final pieces in. And I think also you look at the Nets situation, it's very unique that you have three superstars and they can kind of amplify some of these other players. We saw it with Bruce Brown last year. Maybe that happens with Javon Carter this year. But kind of getting back to a point like you said, Jack, it gives the Nets another tool because now they have a good guard defender, mostly a point guard defender because of his size, but he can still shoot the three ball. Where, no, Bruce Brown, that's still in development. So, yeah, you play Bruce Brown, throw him at whatever lead guard the other team has, it might hurt you a little bit offensively, where that's just not the case for Javon Carter, at least in terms of what the stats say. Obviously, we have to see him on the court, and he still has to perform, but it looks like he has a respectable three-point shot.
Yeah, I mean, his field goal percentage from three across his career is 38.1. Which is, you know, really, really solid. Obviously, the attempts, you know, aren't necessarily elevated. You know, around 2.5 for his career, was 42.5% in 2019-20. So I think that Phoenix, you know, gave him at least a semblance of confidence in there. You know, his rookie season in Memphis, you know, he was 33%. He also really endeared himself in that rookie season to the Memphis. Yep. You know, he fit the grit and grind mentality. And I think that, you know, he is going to be a role player for years to come. And I think that we saw what Bruce Brown, the level of success that he had in this Brooklyn Nets team, you know, not just in the regular season, but in the postseason as well. There were games where Bruce, you know, got us some games. He got us some big possessions, some steals here and there. You know, his floater game, the layups. And I think Javon Carter is going to provide us spurts throughout next year as well, throughout the regular season and even the postseason. You know, we've seen the Atlanta Hawks have some success. You know, I wouldn't want to be, if I'm Trae Young, I wouldn't want to be going up against Javon Carter as a pesky little matchup, because that dude is just, he just fights, man. I can't wait to see him out there in a Brooklyn Nets uniform, because he's just gonna fight, he's gonna hustle, and he's gonna do all the things that are gonna endear him to the fans, to the coaches, and to the franchise overall.
Yeah, I mean, he'll definitely pick up Trae Young full court. That seems like something that's going to lock in, just kind of one of those annoying things. And I think also you look at it from a team building perspective of going into the offseason, there's a good chance the Nets need to sign two point guards, because it looks like Spencer Dinwiddie's probably not going to be back. We'll talk about that later. And then we talked about them adding, you know, possible veteran minimum guy. And the chances of finding two of them that kind of fit your need weren't necessarily always going to be the case. So now you bring in one guard right off the bat that you feel confident in. And like I said, maybe he's not in the rotation. Maybe he fights for that spot. Maybe he only plays if there's injury. But at least it's somebody you know is an NBA player and can have an impact in a certain way with his specific skill set.
Big time.
Now, I also just, Jack, I guess quickly to touch on, I know you mentioned it was pick 19 last year to pick 29 this year, but obviously they get Javon Carter. And I also think, you know, this draft class is stronger than last year's draft class. So I think in terms of like that value, it's not as bad. Obviously, Sadiq Bey had a really good season for the Pistons. So say what you want about that and the whole situation. But I guess kind of making up for a mistake, I think this is a pretty good scenario.
I think Sean Marks is one of, not one of the few GMs, but he has a self-awareness about it. And goes, you know what? You know, Jean Musa wasn't the right pick. Let's see if I can fix something there. You know, we don't need Rodions on this roster. We're not going to be contending. He has a level of being able to assess the situation and take his ego out of it.
Yep.
And you know, but as a GM where you need to think big picture, what is best for the franchise, you know, and not necessarily go, okay, I've got to stick with the pick that I got. Got to ride the whole way through it. No, he does what's best for the players. He does what's best for the team, the coaches. And I think that that's why he is one of the more heralded GMs. You know, we saw him in the draft room with the entire scouting team. High fives aplenty. You know, he spoke glowingly of his scouting team and the, you know, the challenges that they faced this year and how much they helped him and make his picks this year and everything else. Sean Marks is a wonderful GM, Nick. Called him a wizard many a times, the Kiwi wizard. Bloody happy to have Sean Marks in the Brooklyn Nets franchise, and hopefully it's for many years to come.
Agreed. I mean, like you said, kind of that little scouting video or the in the draft room, it just looked like a lot of fun, a lot of good vibes, and usually that comes from good leadership. So, you know, shout out to Sean Marks, who's done obviously an amazing job for the Nets, and hopefully the Nets get that trophy this year so he even gets more recognition for what he's done. But, Jack, you want to talk about the draft picks now?
Let's get into it, Nick. Let's start with Cameron Thomas, Cam Thomas. It seems unfair that the Nets got the best scorer in this draft. And I'm not just saying that because, you know, he's got an array of moves that makes him look like James Harden and Devin Booker and CJ McCollum, but it's legitimately, statistically speaking, the highest points per game in the last 25 seasons for a major conference freshman are Trae Young with 27.4 points, Michael Beasley with 26.2 points, our boy KD with 25.8 points, Markel Fultz with 23.2 points, and last season, Cameron Thomas for LSU. It's, the dude's a bucket.
Yeah, I mean, just a really, like you said, Jack, he is a bucket, kind of fits the vibe of the Nets, you know, elite shot creation, great ball handling. You know, I think he really has the potential to be a great shooter. Like, if you just watch his jumper and see the mechanics and just the open shots he took last year, it just feels like the percentages are going to go up because it just felt like LSU depended on him so much. You know, you and I, we're not college wizards. We don't watch a ton of those games. But just based off of what I watch, it doesn't seem like he had a ton to work with. The workload was really on his back, forced him to probably take some shots he didn't want to take. But also, I think his shot selection could improve on his own. But offensively, he just has a ton of tools. Like, there's so many elements of his game where you look at him and you see how he could gel. I know a lot of people are concerned about, like, you know, how is he going to play when he's not on ball? Well, I thought some of his off-ball stuff and some of the highlights in the film we watched was really promising. And he looked very comfortable in terms of, like, reading his defender not only on ball, but also reading them off ball. So offensively, the only thing he really needs to improve on, I think, is his passing. Like, he needs to get better with his passing decision-making and some of his shot attempts. But other than that, like, there's a lot of skill to his game. Obviously, there's still refinement. He's a very young kid. But there is a lot of potential for somebody at number 27, and especially for a contending team. It feels weird to be so excited about a draft for a team that could have easily won a championship a few months ago.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin O'Connor had him 11 in his mock draft, which is saying something. You know, he was absolutely over the moon with how the and as was Bobby Marks, you know, who obviously has his ties to the Nets franchise and said that, you know, he could make the Rising Stars game, which is, you know, obviously Clack City, it's a travesty that Clack didn't make it last year, but you know, or the year before, where Clack City obviously deserves to be in every form of accreditation that he deserves. But yeah, Cam Thomas, Nick, the array of skills that he has offensively. You know, he's got the post moves. You know, he obviously, you know, we saw the suit, which was absolutely outstanding, inspired by his mum and Kobe Bryant. You know, he obviously takes a lot of inspiration from there. James Harden, one of his idols, he's going to be learning from him. You know that's going to have a big impact on him because he gets to the line like a goddamn madman.
Yep.
So great at creating contact, knows where the defender is, can finish super well, has a really nice floater, and that step
his
back.
His mom said that's his best shot.
the step back, Nick, he creates so much separation off it. Like, it feels like he gets, like, feet and feet, and, like, It just, I mean, the dude already has range, but man, he's going to be something.
Yeah, that's funny you bring that up, Jack. I thought the range was really impressive. Sometimes it's hard to notice in the college game because the line is so different, but like he was taking shots from the LSU logo in a couple plays and knocking them down. He looked very comfortable taking deep threes off the dribble, which is probably one of the more difficult shots you can really attempt. I guess like looking at a little bit more of the negatives, I think defensively, there's a lot of room for improvement. I think some of that's kind of the bigger workload in which he had at LSU, where maybe kind of he lost some of his focus on different plays, can kind of get caught ball watching. And I think just like the fundamentals, his stance is a little bit high. If he's able to just like clean those things up, which I think are correctable things. It's not like those are things where we're talking about a guy who's, you know, super slow or he's undersized or something like that. I think for the guard position, maybe not the tallest guy, but he's built enough where he can be a competent defender in the NBA. And there were plays where the defense did look good, because I think he has relatively quick hands. We didn't see a ton of it in college, but enough for it where we're like, okay, maybe that could be an asset moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, he's still 6'4". So, yeah. Like, he's up short for, I guess, a shooting guard. But you know, I think he's more like just a general combo guard. I think that guards, wings, big. So I think that's how I look at NBA players these days. And, yeah, obviously, at LSU, you know, he was playing in a switching scheme. So it is a little bit tougher for the guards to sort of, you know, make an impact defensively. Obviously, he was basically the heliocentric, you know, James Harden version for that team as well. But I think that there is some promise there. And I think that under the tutelage of Steve Nash and all the coaches in Brooklyn, you know, we know how well that the Nets coach the rookies and get impacts out of them and just all the players individually. You know, they're going to be taught how to do the fundamentals well. And I think he actually is an okay on-ball defender. It's just that when the ball gets switching and moving a lot, you know, he can get lose his focus a little bit. But I think that once in an NBA scheme, I think he's NBA ready in a lot of respects, Nick. And I just think that I'm super excited to see this kid play. And I don't know how he dropped to the Brooklyn Nets, but it is our reward. And you could see how happy, you know, Sean Marks and the team were, and, you know, Twitter lit up and it was just nothing but, you know, A-plus grades for the Brooklyn Nets in getting Cam Thomas. You know, everyone passed him up, and we know how much that sort of bodes well for a lot of guys, you know, that they're going to hold it in their chest and be like, you know, you pass up on me, I'm going to, you know, cook you. I just think that he just has so many great things that are going to show him to be a good NBA player. He is NBA ready to a T, and he's got such a tight handle as well. And I think that is an underrated skill that I think a lot of college players don't have. You know, funnily enough, you know, my guy, Josh Giddey for the OKC Thunder, you know, it lacks that, the tightness and the slickness in his handle, whereas Cam Thomas has that ball on a string and the ability to just kill defenders with it to a way that, you know, James Harden kind of does, Devin Booker kind of does. You can see the inspiration from those guards. And yeah, it's just, and he doesn't necessarily have to have, you know, an immediate John Wall, Russell Westbrook burst of speed, because he knows he can go, all right, I'm going to change my pace and bang, I'm going to go. Yeah. He's awesome, Nick. And I love the drip that he had on draft night. He seemed to be pretty goddamn happy there on the top of Barclays Center, enjoying the view. Cam Thomas, CT, Tomo, can't wait to see him out there in Summer League.
Yeah, Jack, you kind of talked about like some of his feel and like reading the defenders and kind of embracing the contact, getting to the free throw line. It just kind of talks about how he's just like a very skilled basketball player. And he understands the game. You know what I mean? He understands what you're trying to do out there. And you definitely can see shades of Kyrie and Harden, like you mentioned. And also with the tight handle, it gives you confidence in the fact he should be able to attack switches. Like, if you know, I saw a couple plays where he got a big on him and he kind of embarrassed them a little bit because he's able to move that handle. He also feels so comfortable taking some of those deep threes or step back threes. That's something he can kind of go to. And also, I think, you know, you love like the confidence he has. It just seems like a guy that's ready to really compete at that next level. And I remember listening to some interviews and him talking about one thing he was working on this offseason is kind of quicker decision making. And I think that could be a real benefit joining the Nets. Obviously, he's not going to be a lead guard. He's going to be a role player, maybe be that scoring burst off the bench. And that's where that can really have a benefit. And obviously, the NBA game is so much quicker than the college game. But what do you envision his role like in his rookie season?
I think it'll be six man-ish, Nick. Yep. You know, obviously, we'll wait to see what happens with Spencer Dinwiddie and such. But, you know, I can see him out there, you know, running a second unit, playing alongside of James Harden, you know, in the absence of some of our guards, you know, being somewhat of a lead ball handler because of all the skills that we've mentioned in terms of his handle. And I do think that he has, you know, passing chops, you know, in especially in the pick and roll. He can make reads. It's just that a lot of the time, you know, he's asked to just do so much. And I think that that's a good thing, because doing the things that we, you know, maybe are some of his weaknesses are much easier than all of his strengths. It's so much harder to get a step back three. It's so much harder to create your own shot. It's so much harder to shoot nearly 90% from the free throw line.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a, I mean, we sort of talk about, and we sort of know how great this free throw shooting team is. You know, James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, you know, all those dudes are near 90%. And you add Cam Thomas to that, guy's going to have a ball in his hands a lot as well. You know, these guys are just going to be getting free throws, getting easy buckets. And, you know, the not to quote the great Kevin Durant, but I might as well do it. Straight buckets, Nick. Straight buckets.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And I think I look at him kind of almost in that, if he's able to secure a rotation spot. I think always with a rookie, it's a question mark. Like, there's no guarantee they're instantly going to be able to play because there's just other variables. But if he is able to get into the rotation early on, I mean, I don't see why he can't fit into that Landry Shamet role. You know, off-ball movement is there. The three-point shooting, I think, is going to be there. I think the catch-and-shoot is really nice. But then he offers you a little bit more because he has the ability to kind of attack some of these closeouts in a different way that, you know, you see a Kyrie or a Kevin Durant do. Obviously not to that level, but the creativity in that different offensive skill package, it just makes the Nets that much more potent. So I just think that there's a lot of options for him offensively and what he can bring to this team. And I just think the off-ball movement will be something that we see utilized a little bit more that probably wasn't utilized a ton in college. Like I said, I think the real thing for him, the Nets aren't going to really ask him to create a ton for others. He might be asked to do a little bit of self-creation in certain situations or guys sitting out. It's going to be, what level can he defend at the NBA? You know what I mean? Like, the Nets have other guys that can't really defend at a super high level or don't do it regularly during the regular season. They're going to need Cam Thomas to probably pick it up on that end of the floor, which it seems like he has the ability to do, which is kind of more of a question mark. Will he be able to do it so quickly in the NBA?
Yeah, he's just going to have to get NBA reps, get used to the athleticism, get used to the speed. And, you know, that's going to take time. And, you know, Summer League's going to be a good opportunity to showcase some of the chops there. But, you know, he's going to need to earn the minutes, you know, defensively. And I've got a feeling that he can. You know, I think that he's already got just like a smart head on his shoulders. And all of these guys do. You know, to make the NBA, you've got to have a level of awareness about your own game, you know. Mike Schmitz does these great breakdowns with a lot of the prospects, did them with Cam Thomas and Daron Sharp, and both of their attitudes. You know, just I love the attitude of Cam Thomas. I think that he's going to be a really special player, and hopefully he's wearing a Brooklyn Nets uniform for a long time. I think him and Kyrie are going to get on like a house on fire, you know, sharing some Kobe stories. I think Cam's going to ask for all the Kobe stories from Kyrie. You can no doubt about that, and I think Kyrie's going to love mentoring this kid, as he's done for so many other Brooklyn Nets players in their tenure. So, Cam Thomas, Summer League can't come fast enough. And the pick and roll with Daron Sharp is going to be mean.
If you love listening to the Brooklyn Buzz, what's stopping you from grabbing a mic and starting your own show? And there's no better place than Blue Wire Hustle. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and you just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, e-learning courses full of tips and tricks, and on top of that, we'll help you get your show on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you get it all for $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge just for the initial setup. So if you're ready to do more than just listen, talk to us about your favorite team, then make your voice heard in Hustle. Acceptance in the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box in the episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Before we move on to De'Ron Sharpe, Jack, how cool is it that like you're drafted by a contending team, and then you get to play with your favorite player in the NBA? Like, he gets to play with James Harden, he gets to play with Kyrie Irving, he gets to play with Kevin Durant. Like, these are guys that you looked up to, and now they're your teammates. So I feel like if anyone's going to be able to convince somebody, like, hey, you need to do something this way, it's going to be someone that you idolize and someone that you respect. And obviously, he has that to the highest extent for these three. So it honestly should be able to kind of speed up his development and his ability to adapt to the NBA.
Yeah, he's not even 20 yet. You know, he's still super duper young. And
I'm really starting to feel old when I watch the draft. Like it was starting to happen like through the mid 20s, and now I'm like approaching 30, and I'm just like, damn, bro, like I'm literally 10 years older than this kid. And now I can literally call them kids because I'm old. So
I've been doing that for a couple of years, Nick, so don't worry about that. But yeah, it's like me, you know, when I got drafted by OTD Basketball to do a little bit of writing and then, you know, listen to the outlet, I'm like, man, this Nick Faye guy is good on the mic. Man, wouldn't mind jumping on a mic with him. And then, you know, you pick me up for the buzz and, you know, you tell me the little things to do, you know, not to make so many goddamn dumb jokes and, you know, chill out a little bit when need be. And, you know, and that's going to be Cam Thomas to the nth degree. He's going to learn so much from his idol in James Harden. And he's going to – I can't wait to see the basketballer and the person that he turns into being. And, you know, yeah, let's not discount the fact that we've got one of the best point guards in history as our coach. You know, yeah, Steve Nash, I think, is going to show impart some great wisdom to Cam Thomas as well as the players. But, man, this is going to be a fun process watching this kid grow into an NBA player.
Yeah, honestly, it's like funny. It's like the first time I really thought about Steve Nash in the last 24 hours. I mean, I was like hoping maybe we get a couple like little tidbits from him about his thoughts on the players. I'm sure we will at like some point this week. But like you said, you know, you need to work on your decision making and your point guard and playmaking skills. No better guy to talk to than Steve Nash. You know what I mean? Like that's as really as good as it gets. But let's talk about Sharpe. I mean, number 29, part of that trade that we talked about earlier. What do you like about his game, Jack?
He is just a beast on the boards, Nick. And for a person, when he plays basketball, the only thing I can really do is rebound. Then he's a man after my heart. Let's put it that way. Yeah, and also an incredible passer. The touch that he has, you know, I put out a little bit of a tweet. I think it was, I took it from Sam Bassini, who showed off the passing chops that he has. He has just great touch and great feel for the game. He wants the ball in his hands. And you're coming from the Tar Heels, a great system for NBA basketball players. And, you know, he had, you know, his former coach wanting him to be, you know, a Hall of Famer. He's got a Hall of Fame mentality as well, Nick.
Yeah.
You know, he's just, he's a beast. Like, this kid, it looks like a man already. I mean, he is, but like the body that he has, he makes Bruce Brown look like me. Like, he is just an absolute beast. He's got really nice offense and awareness in the pick and roll. Awesome screener. You know, obviously uses his strength and you know, the ability to roll at the right time. You know, I think even Clax could learn a thing or two from some of his screening. And, you know, you can just imagine KD and Kai and James being like, you know, Sharpie, come on, mate. We need to come up here, my dude, you know, holding up the elbow. And Sharp just absolutely nailing someone like, you know, Stephen like Adams. PJ Tucker, yeah. Has his offense in the pick and roll, you know, NBA-ready body. Obviously, the shooting is something where it's just like, well, he didn't really take anything, not a really great free throw shooter. But in the workouts, you see the touch and you see the mechanics, and it's just like, this dude has, like, better touch than our other guy who's a proven three-point shooter in Kessler Edwards. And whether he can actually translate that is, you know, remains to be seen. We've heard that from Clax. We've heard that about Jared Allen, and they haven't necessarily brought it to their NBA level. But Daron Sharpe just has this winner mentality. You know, as he said himself, consider myself a dog and a winner. You know, he's got an awesome attitude and a self-belief. And I love the fact that he sort of, as he mentioned to Mike Schmitz, that he doesn't want to be classified as a big, but just a great all-round player. And because he has so many tools that go beyond the big man, and, you know, he has some lofty aspirations to be considered in the realm of Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic, but two best big men in the league in my eyes. And, yeah, he's just got some great touch and some a great all-round skill set for a dude that's 6'11".
Yeah, I think right off the bat, Jack, you love the motivation and the mentality and the energy in which you can bring. And like you said, 19 years old, and he looks like a beast. Like, he could have a second career as a bodybuilder at this point. He just, like, looks like he puts on muscle really easy, which is difficult to do when you're playing basketball. Like, that's an underrated trait for your genetics to maintain that muscle. He must eat a ton, but you love it on the Nets because, like you said, rebounding instantly fills a need. Like, he's clearly the best rebounder in the draft. Offensive rebounds has an impact on there too. I think he's just like a load in the paint. Like, he's just a big body that you have to move. You mentioned the screen setting. I mentioned PJ Tucker. Like, I can't wait for him to set a screen on PJ Tucker and get KD free so he can have some room to breathe, because he's a big enough guy to do that. And I think also running the floor, that was something where you kind of saw some of his energy, where it's like, okay, like, he's a big ass dude and he's sprinting down the floor and getting position. That's an easy bucket. And there's also like his feel for the game. Obviously, there's room for improvement, but there are a couple like give and go type plays where you could see that, or dribble handoffs where you're like, oh man, I could see that with James Harden easily, because this guy understands when he needs to roll, where he needs to be, and where to position himself. And you kind of mentioned it, Jack. There's some major potential. Like, when I initially saw the pick and listened to some people talk, I was like, oh, I'm not sure how high his ceiling is. But like, the shooting thing is really interesting, because you heard Sean Marks mention it. You heard Daron Sharpe mention himself. And then you've seen other people kind of talk about it. And like you said, the mechanics don't look bad. And
they look great, Nick. Yeah. Just not bad. Like, we compare it to like Jared Allen and, you know, Clax and stuff, some of our other big men. And you look at the shot, it looks Joel Embiid-esque. And Joel Embiid's shot, it's super goddamn fluid, because, you know, Joel Embiid is one of the great athletes to ever step foot in the NBA for a 7-foot big man. You know, he's a Hakeem Olajuwon like. Now, I'm not putting Daron Sharpe in that class just yet, but you see the flick of the wrist. You see just the mechanics. You see the composure. You see the body movement, the ability to just like lift and use his legs. He's just got just great fluidity.
Yeah, it really, I mean, and that's what's kind of interesting, is like, you think he'd be a better free throw shooter. Maybe it's like more touch. Maybe it's a mental thing. But still, like, this is an area where he definitely can improve. I think one other area where I look at him where I think he needs to be better, just based off of how NBA defenses play these days, is his short roll. You know, he says that he has a little bit of a floater, a little bit of a touch shot. Obviously, we have to see that happen. And I think some of his decision making in those situations could be a little bit better. But he's a 19-year-old rookie. You know what I mean? Like, I'm obviously nitpicking him, and I'm expecting him to kind of be able to play at an NBA level. But just as a rim-rolling big, going straight to the rim, protecting the paint, I think he'll be best utilized in drop coverage, because he can use his strength. You know, it seemed like he's very good at taking contact. His verticality seemed like it'd be something that he can depend on the NBA level. The only thing that I'm a little concerned about is, like, I'm not sure how good of a switch defender he'll be. He thinks that he can switch based off of some of the, you know, the tape. It doesn't necessarily look like he can switch, but that's something that kind of developed further down the line. It's not like he's the greatest athlete in the draft. So that's probably my biggest question mark. But at the end of the day, the Nets probably drafted him more so to be a drop coverage type center.
And I think that the times where, you know, he did see that film, you know, he was aware that, you know what, I get my body positioning wasn't great here. Yeah. I think that, you know, he may not have the switchability that Clax does, but I think there is a little bit of potential there. And I think that the fact that he has a desire to do that as well is something where it's just like, you know what, he isn't settling on his laurels. He wants to be the best version of himself. He doesn't want to just be, you know, this awesome shot protector, a rim protector, you know, just a guy that just runs the floor, you know, relentlessly, is great with the ball in his hands, you know, obviously can bully guys on a switch as well. He has just a lot of good tools as a big man. And yeah, I think that the turnovers is probably one thing where you look at it, but I don't necessarily look at that as a bad thing, because you look like Cade Cunningham. You know, he had the ball in his hands a lot as well, De'Ron Sharpe. And, you know, I'd rather have guys who have high turnovers because they're trying to make some nice passes and try to create offense for others. But yeah, I'm super excited to what this guy can do, because his rim protection is obviously elite. He is an elite athlete in so many ways, in terms of strength and NBA verticality. You know, you maybe compare him to, like, in terms of the prototype defensively, you know, Tristan Thompson is someone that comes to mind a little bit, because, you know, Tristan Thompson in those Cleveland days, you know, showed some really nice switchability. Obviously.
You know, and the one correlation that like popped in my head, sorry to cut you off, Jack, would just be like Tristan Thompson, not like super quick or anything like that, but it's the high effort, the high energy. And that's something you can definitely see with Sharpe, where maybe he's a step slow in terms of, you know, defending the guard, but he's going to make that, you know, the six efforts in the play to get himself back in there and contest the shot.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, the fact that the Nets feel an area of need with a rookie in terms of their rebounding, you know, we're like night after night after night, man, I wish we could have a guy who just was a beast on the boards and, well, give me back Reggie Evans and all these different sort of things. Now the Nets literally have the best rebounder in this class. And he's not just good at rebound in terms of, you know, on the offensive glass and being able to just read the ball as well as anyone else does. The dude just loves getting a body and boxing out. Like, he would just, like, flatten you to get the ball and just, like, you know, give it to James and get out in the outlet. And I just can't wait. I'm a man who loves a rebound, Nick. I mentioned that when we were talking about De'Ron Sharpe. I'm going to be doing maybe rebound breakdowns to De'Ron Sharpe. That's how relentless I'm about this dude.
I mean, the one thing that you brought up, Jack, and that he mentioned is that he loves to put a body on somebody, and that's something the Nets have not loved to do in the past. Even, you know, Jared Allen, who's been one of their best rebounders, like he even Clax, like, he's not necessarily a crazy boxer outer type guy. He's more of like, I'm going to just grab the ball. You know, Sharpe just seems like he wants to put a body. He wants to lay somebody out. I know you probably saw this highlight too of him getting the offensive board. He took out like three guys on the way there. I was just like, God damn, like this is a man at 19. So it's really exciting. And I'm definitely more in the ship of like, oh, I don't think rookies can have a role in a championship team type thing. But these two guys fill a need, and based off their skill sets and what the Nets are going to ask them to do, I can easily see both guys being in the rotation at some point. I think for Sharpe, it kind of depends on what the Nets do in free agency and what they're looking for at that center position. But Cam Thomas feels like he could fill in that Shamet role right off the bat, and Sharpe could fill in that brute center role right off the bat. But I just don't think the Nets will depend on brute center every single night.
No, and I think that having him as well, you know, him, Clax, hopefully Blake Griffin, hopefully Jeff Green, I would like what, you know, Blake Griffin could provide in terms of some tutelage to Sharpe, because the way that Blake Griffin has turned himself into a three-point shooter, the way that when he has the ball in his hands, he's become a tremendous playmaker and passer, and just has an incredible amount of intelligence, you know, makes real hustle players as well. You know, Sharpe obviously is an immense rebounder. You know, I think that he's in a pretty goddamn good situation. And, you know, him and Clax, you know, it's going to be fun, because Clax is just, you know, a springy vertical athlete. And, you know, he's improved his rebounding. I like the way that, you know, he's shown the effort there, and he's using his athleticism. But Sharpe has, you know, maybe not necessarily the vertical athleticism, but he's just got an NBA-ready body. And the fact that we're saying that about a 19-year-old as well, you know, going on 20, he's going to make an impact. There's going to be nights where you see, I'd be surprised if we don't see De'Ron Sharpe with a double-double in his rookie season.
Yeah, I agree, Jack. And also just kind of getting back to the passing, which you highlighted a little bit, his ability to make such quick decisions, like his anticipation. He talked about a lot about the scouting report and listening to what the coach has said to him. And I think that's crucial because, like, you need to understand where other teams are going to be trying to defend you. And I also think you'll be able to utilize your passing a little bit more in the NBA where there's more spacing. You see so much zone in college where things kind of get all kind of, you know, just a little messed up and everything is just kind of tight in the paint and you can't make the passes you want to make. Well, now you have space. Your passing should be able to improve a little bit too.
And the Nets look their best when that ball is moving. And yep. When you have a Sharp out there, you know, it's just going to, you know, DHO's with the Cam Thomas, DHO's yep. obviously with our superstars, but he's going to be an initiator. You know, he's going to run the floor. He's going to throw outlet passes. He's going to throw passes from the elbow, from the top of the perimeter. He has a wide array of parts. And there's going to be some turnovers, but yep. I'd rather see them. And, you know, I want to see him make mistakes throughout this season. Obviously, it's a little bit harder to say that for a team that has lost the aspirations. But if the Nets don't really get anyone, I think that We talked about, you know, in previous pods, the fact that, you know, there's something about having rookies on your team that shows a level of excitement and anticipation that you want. You know, we're going to give Sharp and Clax and all these guys a semblance of leeway that we're not going to, you know, with Jeff Green, KD and Blake. That those guys shouldn't be making mistakes as being vets. But, you know, the mistakes are what you learn from, you know, not to get all existential and all teacher on everyone, you know, bringing out the old teacher in me. But, you know, Damron Sharp, I can't wait to see, you know, all the different things that he does and putting that all together out on an NBA court. I want to see him flatten dudes like, you know, Zion Williamson was ripping away steals in his first summer league game. I want Damron Sharp to just flatten everyone else, and hopefully we see that for a long time as a Brooklyn Net. And yeah, it's going to be intriguing to see how he does fit into the rotation. But the mentality, I think he's going to force his way into getting some minutes here, because this dude just wants to win and he wants to impact the game. And because he can do it in so many ways, and because he can do it in a way that provides immediate need for the Brooklyn Nets, that you can make a really strong argument that, you know, he might get more minutes on than Nicholas Claxton on certain nights, you know, in certain matchups where you're going up against, you know, those bigger bruisers where, you know, Clax doesn't necessarily have the frame just yet. Because, you know, we saw, you know, the fact that Damron Sharp was, you know, 278 pounds and then lost 18 pounds, you know, heading into that individual workout. A lot of people were like, well, why is he just getting ready and fit now? I look at it as a positive. This dude wants to get ready for NBA teams. You know, this is what matters.
Why is he getting ready now? He's 19. Like, let the kid get his life straight if he needs to. I mean, I wasn't making great decisions at 19. I don't think a lot of people are. It's like they put this crazy pressure on these athletes that they need to be perfect right at the bat. Like, it's like, chill.
Yeah, and I think that the Nets are going to cultivate all of his best things, and I think they're going to allow him to do so many different things. And, you know, we mentioned the individual skills that he does have, and, you know, just taking away all of the, you know, the passing, the screening, the rebounding, a little bit of switchability here and there, upside as a shooter. Just the mentality of both Cam Thomas and Damron Sharp. These dudes are just, this both become like synonymous with like NBA Twitter and a stigma to it, but they're hoopers. They've got a mentality to just go out there and just put it all out there, and they don't necessarily need to think the game. They have already, you know, an IQ and awareness that allows them to impact. And I don't think that there are a lot of rookies that have that skill automatically, that, you know, that's all already just goes, all right, I'm going to impact this game. I'm going to rebound. I'm going to do whatever it is that means my team can win the game, because that's the only thing that matters to me. And both of these guys, you know, they scream winner.
Yeah, they just have an edge to them. You know what I mean? Like, there's just certain guys, you kind of get that vibe and their competitiveness, and it just seems like these two have that so far. But let's talk about some of the second round picks, unless you got anything else on Sharp, Jack.
Look, I'm going to ask you, Nick, do you think that Tomo or Sharpie is a better nickname? Which one should I, you know, go with and sort of make my sort of thing for their nicknames? You know, if I ever get a post-game presser with one of these dudes, do you think if I call Cam Thomas or Damron Sharp, Sharpie or Tomo, do you think that they're going to just be like, what the hell is this Aussie dickhead talking about?
I mean, Tomo sounds kind of cool, but Sharpie seems like something Ian Eagle would say. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I could definitely hear that on a broadcast this year. Like, I don't know what it's going to be. That's why Ian Eagle gets paid the big bucks. It'll be like Sharpie something, you know, Sharpie on the glass, you know, and there we go. So I think that could be something that catches on. You know, if you hear Ian say it this year, Jack, you need to get some money for it.
Copyright it early. Get it on some T-shirts.
But, Jack, I guess quick thought before I guess we move to second round picks. You definitely think Cam Thomas or Damron Sharp is going to get more minutes this season? Which guy do you think it'd be more likely to get big minutes?
Spencer Dinwiddie leaves, and depending on, you know, what the Nets get in return, and hopefully a sign and trade, which we'll get to obviously a little bit later, it's Cam Thomas. Yeah. If the Nets stay as they are and, you know, don't necessarily add anything other than like a JaVale McGee type, you know, in terms of their big men, and or even nothing, then it's probably De'Ron Sharpe. So I think that both of these guys are going to fight for minutes, and they will get them throughout the season, because we know that how the Nets are in terms of their load management and their injury management. Both of these guys are going to get time. I don't really care, you know, who gets more. I just want both of these guys to get a chance to strut their stuff and showcase their stuff, because Summer League is it's our new Larry O'B, at least in over the next couple of months, Nick, because I'm missing basketball already. I'm watching the tape of these guys. It's getting me insatiable for some hoops.
Yeah, no, Summer League should be really, really fun. I agree with you, Jack. I think if Dinwiddie's back, you look at Sharp. If Dinwiddie's not back, you look at Thomas, because obviously there's going to be a need at guard.
Other way around.
Other way around, whatever. Yeah. So if Dinwiddie obviously is going to play a huge impact, which we'll talk about later. But let's talk about some of the second round picks.
Kessler Edwards, Nick, taken with pick 44. Now, there's a real good role player that we've probably taken in this kid. And, you know, an ability to just sort of slot into an NBA sort of, you know, we talked about, you know, NBA ready guys and Cam Thomas and De'Ron Sharpe. You don't necessarily find those guys in the second round, but Kessler Edwards seems to have a lot of skills, Nick, that would sort of go, you know what? A 6'8 dude that could shoot a three, play some really nice defense, that's an NBA player.
Yeah, I mean, he just screams 3-and-D role player. You know what I mean? And just like look at some of the strengths and the weaknesses of his game, you know, has a three-point shot. Shot is not pretty, but it goes down. He shoots at a good percentage. Defensively, he's shown some things. There's some question mark about his foot speed and kind of what he can do in terms of defending guards, but it looks like against certain forwards, he'd be a really good matchup. Off-ball movement is there. He has some really nice length. It seems like the versatility is a thing. There isn't really much creation to his game. It's not like he's going to, you know, hit the pull-up jumper like Cam Thomas is, but in terms of like being a player that you fit next to a superstar in a specific mold, that's where I think Edwards can really shine. And it's a unique opportunity, I think, on the Nets where, hey, we need a specific skill set and you can do those things. Can you do it at the NBA level? We don't know. That's why you were drafted in the second round. And I think that's really where the question mark is for him. But if he can do it at the NBA level, this feels like it could be a major steal.
The dude is 6'8 with a 6'11 wingspan. And if you watch any tape of Kessler Edwards, yeah, you look at his arms and I'm like, man, that looks 7 foot to me.
Yeah.
Because the way he just stops shots, blocks shots, nullifies shots, and uses his wingspan, it is a real weapon. Like, the dude is like a beast in terms of the length that he does have. And, you know, he can swish. You know, I would say 3 to 5, probably more front court, maybe 2 to 5 with some of those bigger guards. I don't think he has the lateral quickness to switch onto some guards, but you know,
I feel like he could guard like a Chris Middleton. Like that would just a guy that came to my mind where it was like, okay, it's not like necessarily a fast guard, but he's still a guard, I guess I would say, per se. And I think that Edwards, if he can refine his fundamentals and some of his principles to his defensive game, that's like a matchup that would be ideal for him in a perfect world.
Yeah, and I think he's a really good man defender, isolation defender, you know, in so many different positions, you know, other than, like I sort of mentioned, if he's got like, you know, Trae Young or Damian Lillard or, you know, Kyrie Irving, whoever else it might be on him, I think that those guys that are quicker and have really tight handles are going to make him look silly. But, you know, for guys like Chris Middleton, these sort of bigger guys in the perimeter, you know, he's just going to get in your face and just make your life a living hell. It just has really good fundamentals there. He'll rip it off you. You know, he'll block your shot.
Shot blocking was a little surprising for someone his size. Like, it really kind of popped off the screen.
Yeah, I think that he has just good rotate, good like basket, good defensive IQ, ability to go, and good weak side help. You know, sort of like, you know, KD to an extent. Obviously, we're not comparing him to Kevin Durant, but in terms of that individual skill, you know, he wants to block your shot. He knows he has good timing and he knows when to jump because his arms are longer than goddamn Inspector Gadget. So I think that, you know, he provides a skill that I think can give something to the Brooklyn Nets. And, you know, on a two-way contract, you know, I'd almost prefer him to Chris Chioza, Reggie Perry, Mike James, these sort of dudes, because, you know, we were screaming out for some wing help in the postseason and in the regular season for that matter. You know, it was Jeff and it was KD throughout the year. And now we've got a guy who, you know, I think we can get to his weaknesses in a little bit, but in terms of the skills that we've talked about, those are NBA-level skills, and I can see him blocking shots for days on end. I can see him locking up high-quality offensive players, and I can see him shooting some threes, and the threes that he does shoot, obviously catch and shoot, but he shoots them off movement as well, off a screen. You know, you look at sort of like how Joe Harris sort of moves around the perimeter, and it's just like, how do I keep up with this guy? You know, Kessler has that to an extent as well.
Which is impressive for somebody 6'8". You know what I mean? It's kind of expected when it's Joe Harris or Landry Shamet or even Cam Thomas we talked about before. But when you're 6'8 in his size, you don't necessarily anticipate that type of movement. So, I mean, I love the idea of the two-way contract for him because it gives him reps that he's really going to need in the NBA. But I think there's a realistic expectation for him to develop relatively quickly into an NBA role player. I'm not saying a starter, but into a bench piece, a guy that just spaces the floor, shoots threes, and can be an impact defender. Like, I think there's some real potential defensively. I think, he played at Pepperdine, so not necessarily a giant school. I want to see him against NBA competition, against some of the elite, and then we get a better gauge of who he can be defensively. I mean, if it looks good, like I really think this could be a steal of a pick. Obviously, I'm always going to be optimistic here, but I just think there are tools for this guy to be an NBA role player that's 3-and-D. Maybe not the best one in the league or anything like that, but one that could play on a playoff team down the line.
You mentioned Danny Green as a comp, Nick. You know, I think Robert Covington is a similar sort of type. It just doesn't necessarily have, the ability to create his own shot, but, off a catch and shoot and in a system where there's a couple of guys, including, two of our, at least one of our rookies, can do that in spades. He slots in pretty goddamn nicely in terms of his three-point shooting. But I guess in saying that, despite the fact that, that he's a near 40% three-point shooter throughout his college days, the mechanics, they don't look great, Nick, but ultimately it goes in, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's like his body kind of sways when he shoots. He leans, I think it's more on the right side. It's like a leaning shot. It's kind of something you see shot at the end of a half or end of a quarter type thing when guys are just trying to get the shot off and they don't have enough pop behind them. So I'm not sure if you go in and you try to change a shot completely because, like you said, the percentages aren't bad. And if he's only asked to be a catch-and-shoot three-point shooter or, coming off screens and stuff like that, like, I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that creates. So it becomes a question for the Nets. How much do we really adjust that shot or we just kind of let it be type thing?
Yeah, I think that despite the odd mechanics, he does get it off quick. He does have a high release. And when you're 6'8", and you can get off quick and with a high enough release, that's a relatively unguardable shot. Obviously, he is quite rigid. He lands with, one leg in front of the other. It's just really odd. And one thing I'm on board with you, Nick. I don't change something unless it needs to be changed. And, Giannis is a name that comes to mind for me where you look back to his rookie season and the mechanics and the fluidity that he had with his jumper and the comfort. And, it wasn't necessarily as slow as what it is today. You let Kessler do his thing. You let Eddie do his thing. And then if it doesn't work at an NBA level, that's when you get in the tutelage and go, okay, these are some things we need to change. And I think that, as a guy, with the tools that he does have and the prototype that he is, he could be a pretty valuable pick.
Yeah, I agree, Jack. I mean, I really like the pick. I wasn't necessarily a guy I was thinking about prior to the draft or anything like that, but just looking at some of the things and some of the tools, it just kind of looks like one of those under the radar things. And you're drafting him, like I said, for that specific role. He's not a guy that's going to ever be an all-star or anything like that. He has a skill set to be a role player, a 3-and-D guy, where I think there's some real potential defensively. You kind of mentioned some of the one-on-one stuff, and that's where you see some of the length. And I think there's some cleanup at times where he puts himself in a little bit of a bad position, being a little bit off balance occasionally. But, they're all things that were like, hey, reps and being an older player and just kind of having those experiences in the NBA could even make you better. So, and I really like the versatility, like you kind of mentioned earlier, Jack, potentially defending 2 through 5. Like, in certain situations, as he gets older, there's no reason that he couldn't be a small ball 5 in certain sets. You know what I mean? Or even playing with Kevin Durant or Jeff Green or Claxton. Now you have all these guys that can switch over multiple positions. And then you also have multiple weak side rim protectors on the floor, guys that can block shots. You kind of hinted at before. He made some really good rotations, some really heady things where you don't necessarily anticipate a kid his age doing.
Yeah, the Nets have got a big three already when it comes to the NBA team, the summer league team, the big three. Watch out.
Oh, man. But Edwards is, I think after Edwards, I'm a little bit more unsure about the other two guys. I feel not super confident in him being an NBA player, but I think he has a very good shot at least being an NBA bench player. Maybe he's not even a rotation piece, but it seems like there's enough tools for Edwards. If he can defend at the NBA level, he should be able to maintain a career.
For sure. I'll provide, I guess, a little bit of a summation for the last couple of guys, I guess, Nick. Marcus Zagorowski at pick 49. Funnily enough, his older brother, Michael Carter-Williams, former Rookie of the Year, which does bode well. A little bit shorter. You know, a lot of people sort of compare him to Mike James. I think that he's Mike James-esque, but I think he's got a bit more control and probably less shot creation. You know, I think he's a better three-point shooter, has a really nice floater, a really good handle, and he's just he's a smart guard. You know, he just knows when to make the right pass. And I think his lack of size is probably the thing that goes against him a bit, despite, you know, the fact that he is, you know, pesky enough. So I think the size could be against him a little bit. But, you know, you could imagine him and Cheese and Mike James going at each other and shooting buckets during practice like no one else's business. But I don't mind him. I'm intrigued to see what he can provide. But Raekwon Gray is a guy that intrigues me a little bit, Nick. You know, pick 59. You know, he's Millsap-esque and a groundbound sort of like Zion. He's got some Draymond-ish skills. The dude's thick. Like, let's put it that way. Like, he's
got weighs as much as De'Ron Sharp, or if not more.
Yeah, the dude is he's girthy, but that adds to just his immense strength. You watch the tape of him, and he literally looks like he's Zion Williamson. Because he has a really nice, like, and as Zion as the point guard this season for the Pelicans, because he's a great passer, he has defensive versatility, really good low center of gravity, you know, nice quick feet. He's almost like, what would he be like if he lost his strength or lost a bit of his size? Would that detract from him a little bit? You know, he uses the strength to his advantage in terms of as a rebounder. Really good in the open court, despite the fact that, you know, like I said, a little bit bigger, doesn't take away from the athleticism and the drive and that sort of motor. You know, he's just got a really nice passing game. You know, you can do it in the post, you can do it on drives, in the open court. Not a great shooter, though. I think that's probably the number one thing. You know, he doesn't have a three-point shot, but all his other skills are pretty nice, and he does foul a lot, too. And you know, when you get into NBA play, that doesn't necessarily bode well either, but an intriguing flyer. I don't mind Raekwon.
Yeah, I think with Raekwon, you just, like you said, the weight thing. You know, I saw some type of report saying he had 17% body fat at the combine. If he's able to cut that down maybe to 10% and maintain a lot of his muscle, now he's dramatically more athletic, and that obviously improves his game in other aspects. And obviously with that IQ he has, I think the biggest question mark, like you mentioned, Jack, is like, if you're undersized, you probably need to be able to shoot, you know, like in terms of being undersized from vertically. And then if you overfoul, that's not necessarily a great trait to have. That's something that can be cleaned up, though. And then talking about Marcus, like maybe if he combined with his brother Michael, they'd be like an ideal NBA player. Michael Carter-Williams, like 6'6", great defender. Marcus got the great three-point shot. You know, that'd be ideal for both of them to combine. Like you said, I think the size is going to be the concern for him and defensively. And the Nets just can't afford to have more undersized guards. But Marcus seems like the guy that would kind of be the surprise player where like, oh, you know, I don't expect him to make the team. He has a chip on the shoulder. And now all of a sudden he's an NBA player. So I don't want to say neither of these guys have an opportunity. Either of these guys have an opportunity to not make the NBA or make the NBA or whatever it is. But it just seems less likely for these two in comparison to the other three we talked about. And that's why they're later in the draft.
Yeah, likely spent some time in Long Island, and we know that the impact that G League team can have, you know, on a lot of these guys, and how
the G League had a great night last night.
Absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, we'll wait and see. And obviously some other ads. You know, David Duke is an undrafted free agent, as well as Brandon. Is it Raquel or Rachel? I'm not sure how to say it 100%. But you know, both of those guys will see what they can provide in the summer league. They'll certainly be going out there to give their all. Haven't really watched a heap of tape on them, read a little bit, but I'm going to wait and see on them and sort of let them produce and let them show us what they can do at summer league. But it's going to be a fun time. And Nick, we spent so much time talking about prospects that do you reckon we might do another episode on all the off-season stuff, including the Spencer Dinwiddie news, which feels like it changes like every 5 minutes. You know, Mike D'Antoni has left. Kyrie is continuing to be the greatest human being on earth. Kevin Durant obviously having a bit of a say. You know, I reckon we throw out another episode over the next day or so. I reckon we might even have some time tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, we can maybe a little bit free agency primer, because that is literally right around the corner. It is Monday evening that free agency starts. So this is your draft episode right here. Jack, always a pleasure. Big thanks, everybody, for listening. And be sure to check out The Buzz on all streaming platforms.